So I wanted to start off by just sharing with everybody. I wanted to do it so it would be on the internet for all the people who sent cards and emails and whatnot about my mother passing last week. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for that. And just to share with you a little story about that, we all went to Capon last week, and she got to see all of her, the week before that Mother's Day weekend, she got to see all of her grandkids, great-grandkids, children. We all were up there, and that was good for her because, you know, Detrice and Damon and them been away for 2 years. But when we were going to Capon, Judy, my sister, said to my mother, we're all going to be, well, first of all, you have to understand my mother was, she was in and out. She was coherent and not coherent. I mean, you go up there sometimes, she's telling you this story, and then realize later that it was a dream she had that she thought was real. You know, so she was in and out of, when she spoke, you couldn't hardly hear her sometime. And so Judy said to her, we're all going to Capon. And she said, everybody, she said, yep, all the kids, grandkids, everybody's going to Capon, including her best friend, Cora. So she said, oh, Cora's going. So she said, Judy said, really bright. She goes, oh, Cora's going too? So nobody is going to be here. Good, because I won't be here when you get back. So it was like she was saying, all right, now that everybody's gone, I can do my thing without being worried about anybody creeping up on me, right? Yeah, so, yep, so she made her transition. And, you know, Cora, her friend, who is, you know, it's basically a what we would call a fundamentalist church, and, you know, believes that, you know, you go to heaven, blah, blah, blah. But Cora said, and Cora spent a weekend up there listening to metaphysics in Capon, and she said, you know, why do we mourn when we know people are going to glory? I mean, what it's like, you tend to, oh, no, I don't want you to go. It's like if we were going to the Bahamas and somebody said, oh, I don't want you to go to the Bahamas, right? You know, so I know we, you know, the thing is, you know, the ego wants to hold on to the personality. And yes, I do have all the dynamics of, you know, the loss of my mother. But at the same time, you got to say, she's in the Bahamas. Yeah, so. But, you know, with that same idea in mind, sort of what the talk today is about, God is right here, right now. And, you know, without a doubt, by means of divine wisdom, we're really looking to try to understand what is this thing about really being spiritually enlightened, you know, about really understanding the whole dynamic of this process we're going through. Because there's this void between where we are now and where we think we want to be, a void between what we think we know and understand and what we really want to get to know and understand. And, you know, I keep using these same Bible verses over and over again, but it starts to make more sense, when you heard Paul said, for now we see in the mirror dimly, which means we really don't understand this process that we're going through. We don't understand that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Yes, intellectually, we'll say, somebody will say something to us, oh, yeah, you know, we're spiritual beings having a human experience, but we can't really comprehend what that's all about. So the truth seeker who truly wants a relationship with God would say, you know, I want to know God, meaning I want to understand who God is and what my relationship is to this divine consciousness. So, you know, but how many of us long to really know what Jesus felt in his heart when he said, I and the Father are one? You know, what did that really mean? And we'll see, yes, Jesus said, he said, I and the Father are one. And again, for those who don't understand, I is God and the Father is God. So Jesus was never really talking about the personality. He was talking about the truth of his being, being at one with the truth of his being. Okay? So the idea that, again, that there's this chasm or this void that seems to separate us from the oneness that we seek, as being able to understand what is this oneness really all about. So the thought we need to contemplate about oneness is, do we really know what we're pursuing? So we're all saying, well, I want to be one with God. But do you know what that really means? Do you really comprehend the idea? So because oneness in its true sense, we're trying to say, I want me, this personality, Butch, to be one with God. All right? But oneness is beyond that. The personality can't be one with God. You get what I'm saying? Because it would still want to be itself. All right? So this idea is getting to a point where Jesus reached a point where he did not know where he ended and God began. All he knew was God. And that's a whole nother perception. So it's getting beyond the personal self. So the thought to contemplate in our spiritual quest is, again, what am I really going after? And I think if we get real with ourselves, we may discover that we really do not have a clue as to what we're seeking. So a common response would probably be, well, I want to live my life more fully from spirit. Okay? And this is a wonderful quest. But I think what many of us are really saying is, I want to live my life more fully from spirit is really, it's my ego perception's understanding of what that really is. All right? Because the ego can't really understand anything outside of the ego. As you heard me say before, the ego can't jump out of the ego. Does that make sense? Okay? So this is because right here, right now, ego perception is all we know and is what we're most comfortable with. It's the way we see our individual world is what we believe is reality. So when you say, well, what is reality? We look around and we say, well, this is it. But, you know, quantum physicists say this is not it. This is all a projection of your consciousness. Deepak Chopra says that while you're looking out this way, what's behind you is nothing but quantum soup. There's nothing back there. Now, you see something back there because that's your reality that you're looking at. Get what I'm saying? But we're constantly forming this reality through our own consciousness. So to emphasize this point, result-oriented action is the arena of the ego life, while quiet contemplation is the venue of the spiritual life. For each one of us, it's a battle between I must get this done and be still and know that I am God. You get it? All right? Even as you're going through, I must get this done, Spirit is saying to you, just be still and know that I am God. Okay? Now, typically in our busy lives, being still is not really an option until we become so physically and mentally tired that we just can't move our bodies anymore, and then we just settle down and flop into the couch. But even while we're flopped into the couch, our mind is still busy trying to get things done. Am I right? That's why, you know, we're meditating. We're sitting there meditating, and we're going, well, let's see, I got to put the pork roast in. I got to cut the grass. And we're going through all these things because stilling the mind is just, it's a whole other dynamic, okay? Now, as truth students, we're not being asked to sit and do nothing but pray. Did everybody hear that? Okay? Remember the Quakers say, as you pray, move your feet, okay? So rather, it's the nature of our doing that we're questioning. Now, to explain this, listen to this Hindu explanation of the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna. I've already told you that in the world, aspirants, meaning truth seekers, may find enlightenment by two different paths. The spiritually contemplative person takes the path of knowledge, while the spiritually active person takes the path of selfless action. Everybody with me? Okay. So freedom from activity can never be achieved by abstaining from action. Nobody can become perfect by merely ceasing to act. In fact, nobody can ever really rest from his or her activity, even for a moment. The world itself is imprisoned in its own activity. Except where actions are performed as worship of God. So when you're really sitting in true prayer and meditation, that's when action settles down, okay? He says, therefore, you must perform every action sacramentally, and I'll explain that later, and be free from all attachment to results. Did everybody just hear what I said? Now, right away, your ego goes, wait a minute, I can't be doing stuff and not have, I'm cutting the grass. My goal is to finish cutting this grass. And so while we're so busy wanting to finish cutting the grass, but we're not in the moment of what? Cutting the grass, okay? So he's saying, have your actions have no attachment to the results. Do your duty always, but without attachment to results. That is how a man, a woman, reaches the ultimate truth by working without anxiety about results. Okay? Now, we may be able to understand that intellectually, but practically it may not make sense. Simply, how can one work without wanting or needing a certain result, a certain outcome, a certain reward? Now, for the materialistic action-oriented person, the manifestation of a material goal is foremost in that person's mind. I must get this done. All right? Even if you're eating an apple, it's all about what? I must finish this apple. Where Thich Nhat Hanh says, the bite of the apple and the chewing of the apple is where you want to be in the moment. Not the finishing of it, but being in the moment. Okay? I mean, think about how many things we do where we say, man, I can't wait to finish this so I can get to this. All right? Your to-do list, right? You're checking it off. I got this to do. And then I got this to do. So they're talking about it's all about just right being in the moment, right here, right now. Okay? And let's admit it, for most of us, material gain is our primary goal, and spiritual gain is an interesting pursuit that falls behind, far behind, our pursuit of material things. Is your first goal to be still and know? Or is your first goal to get your 401k up to a certain amount? Or you see what I'm saying? Okay? And so, you know, material gain is the thing that we're always striving for. And spiritual gain is sort of like it's a pursuit that's in the background. So without the knowledge, the remembrance that we are truly individual expressions of God, made in the what? Image and likeness of God. You know why we were made in the image and likeness of God? Because God had nothing else to make us out of but God's self. There was no Home Depot. Right? All there was and all there is God. So we are made out of the stuff that God is. So we cling to that which is easiest to know, acquire, and own. So if somebody asks you about yourself, do you tell them what you do, what you have, where you live? You know, that's the stuff that we cling to. However, in spite of the strong attractions of material life, one of the ideas that draws us to the spiritual life is to learn how to live in a state of peace. If somebody says to you, you know, being in the spiritual life is living in a state of peace, right? Then your whole being clings to that, right? Am I right? Everybody goes, oh, man, to live in a state of peace. Okay? So one of the ideas that draws us to that is that idea, but, you know, that's a consciousness that does not worry. So when you say, I want to live in a state of peace, you're talking about a consciousness that does not worry. Want me to say that again? You get what I'm saying? A state of peace means a consciousness that does not worry. No matter what anybody tells you, you go, okay. Think about some of the stuff you heard this past week. Were you able to go, okay? Right? So that's the idea, you know. So if that's the idea, that we can cling to the idea that, yes, if the spiritual life is about living in a state of peace, and I like the way that feels, then that means the material life is missing something. Okay? So what Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita is the way to enlightenment, healing, peace, and understanding is to learn how to live and act sacramentally. Now, a sacrament is a visible form of invisible grace. Let me say it. A sacrament is a visible form of invisible grace. A sacrament is a visible form of invisible grace. One more time. A sacrament is a visible form of invisible grace. Simply, when you're acting from grace, you're continuously expressing God's love in every aspect of your life. If you're living sacramentally, you're continuously expressing God's love in every aspect of your life. Can everybody? Okay. So grace is a natural state of our spiritual self. So you ask, how can I acquire grace? The answer is you cannot. Grace is the natural state of your spiritual self. You cannot acquire what you already have innately within you. You get me? It's like saying, well, how can I become more spiritual? You cannot, because you are already spiritual. You are a spiritual being functioning in a human body. So you say, well, how can I? You can't become more than what you already are. You become can become more aware of what you are. Okay? So you ask, well, how can I learn to live from grace? Well, grace is actually the goal. Now, listen carefully. Grace is actually the goal of every encounter your life is striving to teach you. With every encounter, with every experience in your life, there's a lesson being presented to you to remember to keep yourself immersed in God's grace. I don't care what happens. Pam called up one day, Damon and Pam, on the Brooklyn Bridge. Was it the Brooklyn Bridge? The Verrazano, now, either one in New York is crazy, right? They called me in the middle of the night. They were out on Long Island, and they got a flat tire on that bridge. Again, whether it's the Brooklyn Bridge, Verrazano Bridge in New York City, that's insane. You get what I'm saying? And I put that phone down. All I could do was just pray. I mean, because I was like, oh, gosh. All right? And I think it was a truck driver or something came up and blocked, but he blocked the traffic so that you guys, a truck driver come and blocked the traffic so they would be safe. Well, but you get what I'm saying? Even in the midst of that, you have to say, oh, I know God is here, right now. Okay? You know, we have to be like Jacob. And again, I know I'd use these same Bible verses over and again, but they begin to make more sense. You have to be like Jacob, who awoke from his dreams and said, surely the Lord is in this place, in this work that I do, in this experience I'm having, in this relationship that I'm in these feelings and emotions, right here on the Brooklyn Bridge. You got to say, God is in this place. Okay? And he realizes how awesome is this place, this work, this experience, this relationship, this circumstance. Can you imagine being in a circumstance that's just traumatic? And you go, well, how awesome is this circumstance? Because it's given me the opportunity to remember that I'm living in God's grace. Does that make sense? All right? And when you begin to understand that, you begin to say, there is nothing that can happen to me that will take me away from understanding that I am in the midst of God right now, all right? So the why of life is revealed to us when our actions are filled with the contemplation of the wonder of God's love in us, no matter what we are experiencing. And this lesson takes us back to, again, the Buddhist idea of mindfulness, which says, in every action, I am continuously mindful of the moment. All right? I love to cook. And I'm cutting up tons of vegetables. You know, the kids call up the other night. Dad, we want salmon. We want this. We want that. You know, we're coming over. All right? I got right up, went in the kitchen, took the stuff out, cutting. And I said to Pam, I said, I love doing this. You get what I'm saying? It wasn't, you know, I can't wait to get to the final product. I love cutting up those vegetables. Okay? And I was mindful of cutting up those vegetables. I don't want nobody else to cut them because they ain't going to cut them like I cut them. Right? Right, Mary? Right? Yeah. You know? You know? And so that's the idea of just being mindful of that thing that you are doing in the moment. Okay? And again, in every action, I am mindful of this moment, which is the same as the Christian idea. In every action, I'm continuously mindful of the grace of God. I am in the grace of God. This moment is the only place, you can say this with me, because you know what I'm going to say, where you can find God. This moment, right now, is the only place you can find God. Okay? And if I'm not mindful of the moment, I cannot establish a sense of oneness with God. So in the Buddhist definition, of sanity is when mind and body are synchronized with the present moment. Isn't that deep? Okay? The Buddhist definition, when mind and body are synchronized with the present moment. So material goals usually place our mind in the future. You know, in the future I'm going to have this. But God is not in the future. God is right here, right now. Grace is right here, right now. Sanity is right here, right now. Okay? So a prayer like, I want to be healed, is future oriented. It places the one praying mentally outside of the parameters of the awareness of God's omnipresence. As I said in a previous lesson, a prayer, wish, or desire that's future oriented, hoping for something to happen in the future, means you are operating from the circumference of your being, Whereas a prayer of acknowledgement, such as, I am prosperous, I am healed, places the one praying at the center of his or her being, right in the middle of the healing grace of God. Okay? It's like with, you've heard me talk about Terry, Milton Sheila's daughter, had that horrible car accident, and everybody's telling her, you know, it's going to be a long time before you get well. You know, they're giving all these future things that are going to happen. And I don't know if Pamela was you or somebody said to you that, no, you need to say to her, you cannot do that right now. But you know what? You are going to be able to do that. Because they're telling her she may not be able to do that. You get what I'm saying? And so it says, well, no, Terry, you can't do that right now. But you are going to be able to do that. I see you doing that. It's in my mind's eye. And help her get it into her mind's eye. All right? So as Krishna said, you must perform every action sacramentally. To repeat, a sacrament is a visible form of invisible grace. Grace is evidence of God's love in this world. Therefore, we must learn to perform every action in the consciousness, in the awareness that we are in the presence of God's grace. And let me say it again. We must learn to perform every action in the consciousness, in the awareness that we are in the presence of God's grace. And to repeat, we also define grace as the natural state of our spiritual self. Our spiritual self would never pray, I want to be healed. I want to be prosperous. Because in our natural state, we would know that we are already whole and we are already in the midst of abundant blessing. It is the personal self that's forgotten the truth, the reality, the existence, the experience of the spiritual self. Let me say that again. Our personal self has forgotten our spiritual self. Right? Now, you say, well, is the spiritual self really there? Do you sit around all day saying, I need my blood to run this way. I need the food to digest. I need to, you know, you talk about all the things that are happening in your body. I need my hair to grow. I've been saying that every day. Right? You know, you don't sit around and say those things because the spiritual body automatically takes care of all of that. So you know it's there. All right? And the key is, if that is doing it, regardless of what where your mind is, once you connect your mind to it, everything you ever want. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and everything else will be added unto you. Well, where's the kingdom of God? It's within you. All right? And who said that? Jesus. Okay? So, again, this natural state, and we live from that abundance. So the personal self has fallen from grace. We've heard that, right? The personal self has fallen from grace because it's become entrenched. Now, I'm jumping into science right now. Is everybody with me? Okay. Remember, unity metaphysics is cosmology, theology, psychology, science, and mysticism. All right, so we're getting ready to jump into some science. So the personal self has fallen from grace because it's become entrenched in the density of three-dimensional physicality, what Jesus called this world. So we are entrenched in the density of three-dimensional physicality. So you watch the news and you go, oh, wow, that's what's going on. Now, that means the fact that you're so caught up in it means you're what? You're entrapped in the density of three-dimensional physicality. If I don't go to work, I won't get paid. If I don't get paid, I won't be able to eat. I'm going to get thrown on the street. That's the what? That's the density of three-dimensional. Is that everybody with me? Okay, so the personal self prays hoping for future gain of healing, money, or whatever. Our greatest dis-ease is not knowing that we are indeed divine, which translates into meaning that we're already whole, we already are and have all that we desire. The difficulty is that the personal self hasn't yet learned how to pull all its desires through the density of thinking that believes that it does not already have it. You with me? Okay. So, have you ever heard the expression, why are you so dense? Okay. The dictionary defines density as being thick, hard to penetrate, that which permits little light to pass through because of compactness of matter. Now, to help us understand this, I want to give you a true conversation that went on between a nun and a scientist. Okay? So the scientist says that every atom has a certain measure of consciousness. Such consciousness is inherent in the particles of matter and remain as such for the varying types of work for which the atom has grouped. Hold up your hand. The atoms have grouped as a hand, and they're not going to stop being a hand until your consciousness no longer says that they need to be a hand. That's what it's saying. Does that make sense? The chair you're sitting on, those are atoms that the consciousness that developed that chair put that in sort of thing. So they're going to stay as an atom. If they've decided not to be an atom, I mean, not to stay in it, you'd be all falling on the floor. All right? So that's what he's saying. He says the atoms have consciousness, and once the observer puts them into a certain form, they're going to stay in that group form until something changes. All right? So he goes and says his theory is that the grouping of atoms and cells fixed their effect. The rotation at certain rates of vibration determined the density. Therefore, by changing the patterns and varying the vibration, man, meaning each one of us, could produce differing results, producing finer and less dense types of matter. So we all say if you step out onto water, we know that water, the molecules that form water, say, you step out into me, you're going to go right through me. But Jesus, because the density of our body is different from the density of water, but Jesus realigned the density of his body with the density of the water and was able to do what? Step out onto it. Now, if you've ever been to Cape Ann Springs, the water is so cold there that you can walk on water. But you get what I'm saying about how the process works, okay? Does everybody get that? See, so when you're saying to yourself, you know, this is what I need, but I don't have the resources for it, you're creating a density in your mind that's preventing the light from coming through that would put you in a space where that would be yours, all right? So the question, do you think anger, fear, stubbornness, resistance produces more or less density? More, right. Whereas love, compassion, forgiveness, understanding produces less density, right? So while anger and fear block divine light from entering to your consciousness, your body, your mind, love, compassion, gentleness allow light to enter into your consciousness and heal your body. So if you get a doctor saying to you, you've got this, and you take that fully on, it causes you to create a density that does not allow the light that is naturally trying to come through to let you know that that's not where you are. Is that making sense on a practical level? Okay. So in their conversation, the scientist and the nun came to the thrilling conclusion that the scientist's attempt at changing the vibratory rate of atomic matter is the same as the ancient teachings of the light of spiritual understanding penetrating the density of man's immersion in matter. Simply, prayer, meditation, spiritual contemplation helps us to emerge from being immersed in dense matter. And you can do that in a moment. In the moment, you become still. And in that stillness, you're shutting out all that stuff that causes us to become dense. And in that moment, you lighten up. All right? Okay? So prayer, meditation, spiritual contemplation, it rearranges the atoms of our mind and our body, making us less dense and more susceptible to receiving the light of God within. Okay? So we've got the power. The mechanisms are prayer and meditation and those things that allow us to just be still and what? Know. All right? So if we use the dictionary definition, to stay with me, of matter, which says it is the substance of thought or expression, the focus of this discussion becomes how do we allow more light to enter into the density of our thinking? Well, first we need to become aware of how dense our present way of thinking and being is. Simply ask yourself, how stubborn and fixed and resistant am I in my present way of being? Yeah, you got to figure out where you are, all right? And if we each evaluate the way we presently think and act, we would begin to understand how dense we presently are, meaning we begin to understand how our present way of thinking and expressing keeps the light of divine understanding from entering into our mind and then subsequently into our lives. So simply, put more light into your thinking and you become less dense. The less dense you become, the more healed from fear you become. The more healed from fear you become, the more healing you experience in every aspect of your life. And density is that fear that comes up that says, oh, I'm not going to be able to get through this, so I can't go, or this is going. You follow me? All those fearful thoughts that come up are causing you to become more dense. Now, the thing to understand here is, it doesn't mean that when fear comes up, now you're just going to blow it off and say, oh, no, I'm not going to be afraid. But you will say to yourself, I am consciously making myself more dense, more resistant to the healing that the universe is trying to bring to this. You get it? You can now take ownership and saying, I'm creating this because I'm not allowing myself to just be still and know. And that's the first key. And you know what? The ego doesn't like that. The ego doesn't want to know that you know what it's doing to you. It doesn't. Because now you can question it. You can challenge it. Okay? So according to Deuteronomy 12:7, it says, There is in the presence of the Lord your God, you and your family shall eat and shall rejoice in everything you put your hand to, because the Lord God has blessed you. Not will bless you, but has blessed you by putting you in the midst of grace. All right? And blessings come easier to a mind that is less dense, mind that is more easily allows the light of divine understanding to shine through into your life. So if we could just learn to keep God's love in our mind at all times, we would have the power to transform the dense particles of our mind and body into finer, less dense, less resistant vibrations. A less resistant vibration, disease can't live in that. You get what I'm saying? Disease can only live in a very dense vibration. All right? So up to this point, we have lived our lives as a testimony to what we do, what we possess, what position we have, how much power we have. It is time we begin living our lives as a testimony of the light. And each action that you perform each day, get in the habit of saying, am I holding this action, this experience, this person, this moment as a holy sacrament, which is a visible form of the invisible grace of God? Or am I holding this in anger and fear that makes it very dense and very hard for me to come over? So just remember that when things seem difficult, when you feel bogged down with some burdensome thought or situation, it means that the thought atoms of your mind are too dense. You literally and spiritually need to lighten up. So just say to yourself, all right, already, I need to lighten up and allow the light of God to enter into this situation. Amen.